Hey everyone, this is Marley Silverbrand here, and welcome to the long-awaited episode 21 of the Cinephiles podcast. I would really, really, really like to apologize. Over the past 2 months, I believe, I've gone without recording an episode. I actually did record an episode. I just have not had the time to edit it at all, just because I've been busy, like, filming weddings, getting my freelance business off the ground, and yeah, but within this 2 months, there's been quite a lot of news. I'm not going to talk about a lot of it. I'm going to save it for an actual episode, but quite a lot of news happened, and hopefully I can get Jeremy, Ryan, and Kelsey together, and we can talk about, like, the numerous things that happened in movie and TV news. Like the whole Ben Affleck playing Batman now, Dan Harmon returning to Community, and just a crazy amount of stuff. But I'm actually recording this right now just after watching the latest episode of Breaking Bad, the final season, the final 8 episodes or whatever. It's Vince Gilligan's saying it's season 6, even though I still see it as season 5 because AMC is just... I don't really like AMC all that much because it really should be 13 episode, like, seasons instead of 8 episodes. But we still have Breaking Bad, and this episode, which wasn't, I can't believe what it was entitled, but it was after Jesse, the last episode ended with Jesse, throwing gas, like, went and breaking into Walt and Skyler's and the rest of his family's house, and he's torching it with gas and gonna light it on fire. And then in this episode, spoilers for this episode of Breaking Bad, in this episode, I found it a little bit... It didn't feel just right, just because in this episode it shows Jesse, like, just spraying gasoline, like, all over, like, Walt's house, like he's gonna burn it down, and then he's about to light it, and then someone comes busting through the door. That someone happened to be Hank Schrader, which he said he was following him all this time, which I have... I don't really find believable all that much, I don't know. It's Breaking Bad. It was really tense when Hank comes busting in and just saying, "Hey, we can take down Walt together." So far, it seems like especially at the end of this episode, the latest episode, Hank and Jesse are going to be working together to take down Walt, because after Jesse has discovered in the last episode that he discovered what Walt actually did to the little kid. He used the ricin on the kid. The pieces of the puzzle all went together, and it pissed him off, and now he wants to take Walt down. At first, he was just like... Walt really wanted him, Jesse, to just go away and disappear and just kind of, like, find a new identity. And Jesse was so close to finding a new identity and just going in the car, and he was so close, but he just didn't want to do it, and the pieces of the puzzle finally clicked together for Jesse, and now he is not on Team Heisenberg anymore, and he's on Team Hank, it seems like. But at the very end of this episode, which I'm just going to go ahead and say it. I'm just going to mark this a spoiler cast for the Breaking Bad, for the latest episode of Breaking Bad. Apparently, Walt wanted to give Jesse, like, one more shot. He gave him, like, one more shot to, like, talk to him, like, in, like, broad daylight. And Hank, like, wired up Jesse. But Walt did not know. I don't know. I had a feeling that Walt probably knew about Jesse wearing a wire, even though he didn't really know, but I had a feeling that Walt has pretty much been right about everything up to this point. And Jesse felt a little bit sketched out, so he gave him a call on his cell phone while Walt was sitting on the bench waiting for him. He gave him a call on the cell phone saying that, "I'm going to be coming for you. I'm going to be coming where you actually live," kind of freaking out Walt. And then at the end of the episode, Walt makes one more phone call to Todd. Todd, he wants to get Todd's father, the neo-Nazi, like back in business. And in my opinion, he's going to kill Jesse in the next episode or in the next coming episodes. I did not really see this coming. If it doesn't, it, for me, I think that Jesse is essential for Walt. Like he's always been essential for Walt, no matter what Walt thought of him. Like especially in the first season, how he thought he was just a drug addict. Walt needed Jesse to cook the meth, and like he didn't really trust anyone else. Like he trusted Todd to some extent, which is I'm guessing why. Well, the only reason why he would call Todd is that he knows that he pretty much has a killing machine on his shoulders. Like he has a killing machine that he can just call at any time, and like yeah, they're pretty much, it's almost like a Deus Ex Machina kind of strategy for Walt, just kind of like, oh, let's just call these guys in because we can't stop them, and yeah. But if Jesse is working with the DEA and Jesse finds out about this, it might be the DEA versus the neo-Nazis, and that will be just like an all-out brawl, it looks like. I don't know. Overall, I thought this episode was it was all right. It wasn't as good as the last episode, especially with the last episode was entitled "Confessions" with the whole videotape, because that one just came out of left field, and I didn't even predict that at all. No one predicted it, even though there's some people on Reddit and like forums saying that. Yeah, it's like, oh yeah, I predicted this. I'm like, no, you didn't. No, you didn't. But overall, I thought this is a pretty good episode. It was a little bit dull, just especially talking about when Marie was like talking to a psychiatrist and saying, "I don't know what to do," and then I don't know. It was a little bit dull. It wasn't as tense as last episode, but this episode was solid, and I'm yeah, I don't know. The neo-Nazis, I have some problems with the neo-Nazis, like I said, with the whole Deus Ex Machina. It's like, it seems like all you have to do is just call on these guys, and they're like, they don't die. Which is why I'm going to be interested if they actually, like, if the DEA is going up against these neo-Nazis, and Walt might be a little bit screwed. And also, I have one more theory. I still have like a theory. I'm not sure if I mentioned this on the podcast. Probably not, because it's been 2 months since I've been recording these, and I've been coming up with theories for Breaking Bad because it's one of my favorite shows, if I haven't mentioned, and if you haven't noticed, because I've been talking about this for about 10 minutes straight. I have a feeling if Walt has nothing else to go on, if he has no other options, I have a feeling that Walt is gonna fake his own death at some point in this season. Just because, like, especially in the season premiere of the second half of season 5, like when Walt is going in and getting the ricin in the like he hid it in the wall outlet. He went to go get that. And his neighbor, like he's like he's Walt is like all messed up. I'm guessing he still has the cancer. Like he's really skinny. I don't think he's doing meth. Everyone says he's doing meth. I'm like, no. When his neighbor like sees him and like, I don't know. The scene is surreal. Like in the season premiere, like the cold open. I have a feeling that like when his neighbor like dropped like her groceries and oranges kind of go rolling out into the pavement, It doesn't really seem like I like her way, the way she looked, it didn't really seem like, oh my God, here's my crazy ass neighbor who cooks meth. It looks like she just saw a ghost. It's like, here's a person that disappeared for 6 months, and here he is again. I thought he was dead. So I have a feeling that Walt probably fakes his own death, whether it's in the next episode, the episode after that, which they only have about, I think there's only about 4 more episodes or 5 more episodes in this season, so they're gonna have to like, it's gonna be like an all-out like brawl for these last 4 episodes, and I'm very interested. But yeah, that was like my 10-minute recap and just kind of like final thoughts after I've literally just like turned off the TV and recorded this episode. But yeah, Breaking Bad is awesome as usual. And yeah, I will be recording another episode just talking about like Ben Affleck as Batman, how I feel about that. Spoilers, I don't really care, honestly. Like Ben Affleck, he like Daredevil, like he wasn't a bad superhero for Daredevil. Like he's not he wasn't a re a ba he wasn't really acting bad in my opinion in that movie. The movie was terrible because it was just a terrible movie. But Ben Affleck, it like he's has some hit or misses, and he's done a lot of romantic comedies, like that he probably shouldn't have made. But in my opinion, like I don't really have a problem with this whole Ben Affleck thing, and yeah. But I would like to like sort of transition after this little monologue that I'm having into an interview that I did a couple months ago, which it was actually like I wasn't expecting to have like this huge gap. I got extremely busy. I actually did an interview with Griffin Hammond of IndieMogul, and I had a joy talking with Griffin Hammond. We talked a lot about his Sriracha documentary, which it's in September, right around film festivals, which is kind of perfect that I kind of waited until September for when film festivals start ending their submissions and start creating like their schedule. Because Griffin Hammond is gonna be sending the Sriracha documentary to a lot of film festivals like Sundance, and I think he mentioned Cannes in the interview, or a South by Southwest, and I had mentioned in an interview he should send it to the Itza Film Festival. Yeah, I enjoy talking with Griffin Hammond, and we didn't really talk much about Indie Mogul, even though Indie Mogul's season 3 of Indie News starts September 9th, I believe, on the Indie Mogul's YouTube channel. And if you're a filmmaker like me, Indie Mogul is should be like your first subscribed like channel, just because they help you out with everything. Which for example, they helped me out to get like really nice slider shots for the wedding video that I produced, because I didn't really have a camera slider. I'm like, oh, I need a camera slider so I can get like these smooth shots of just showing showing the ceremony and showing like the head table and stuff like that. And Griffin Hammond actually suggested use table sliders, and it worked great. And watch Indie Mogul for fun little tips and DIYs and just cool filmmaking news and stuff like that. And also check out the Sriracha documentary, which it was one of my it was he actually ran a Kickstarter. I was hoping to get this out around when the Kickstarter was still active, so you guys could potentially donate to it. But the Kickstarter is now ended. That was my first Kickstarter that I actually donated to. I put $10 into it, and it was really fun. But the Sriracha documentary looks absolutely beautiful. The stuff he's doing that I've seen from Indie Mogul and stuff like that, it looks really great, and such an interesting documentary on Sriracha. And if you don't know what Sriracha is, go to your local grocery store. I'm pretty sure it's at your local grocery store, and just try it. It's probably the best hot sauce I've ever had. And Griffin Hammond is showing the world of Sriracha, the magic of Sriracha, and how it's made, and and the fan and talking to its fans and stuff like that. But yeah, without further ado, here is my interview with Griffin Hammond.
Okay, everyone, we only have one shot at this. Quiet on the set, please. Camera ready, and action.
Start the show!
All right, so I'm here with Griffin Hammond. He runs the YouTube channel, the very successful YouTube channel, Indie Mogul. And he's also the producer, cinematographer, director, writer on the upcoming Sriracha documentary film, short documentary. Griffin, how are you doing today?
I'm doing pretty well, especially since the Kickstarter campaign just ended on Friday. And I was asking for $5,000, but we raised $21,000 for the film, which is incredible.
How does that feel? Like, I don't even know how that would feel for myself, just, like, to have, like, this huge fan base, and, like, there you ask for, like, 5,000, like, oh, well, people actually care about what I do.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's helpful that the topic is so, well-liked. People like Sriracha. So, I mean, I had some of my own fans through Indie Mogul, but I think if it weren't for the passion that exists around Sriracha, there wouldn't be as many people backing the project. But yeah, it feels amazing just knowing that it's not even the money so much that's so exciting. It's just the fact that 1,300 people are ready to watch the movie when it comes out. I mean, that's just really cool. I think that's what we always want when we make something, is just for people to watch it.
Yeah, I know I didn't really know anything about Sriracha just because I don't really like hot sauce all that much. But like, I tried it, and it actually... Like, I'm interested to see the documentary even more now, just because it's, like, such, a, like, a product that I didn't know about. And I was just like, I want to know, like, the backstory. Like, is that, like, what you were, you wanted to show the backstory of, like, this hot sauce? Is that why?
Yeah, I mean, I think it surprised me that no one has told the story yet, because it's something that's so popular. I mean, it's a condiment, but there are t-shirts and tattoos. I mean, you just don't see that kind of passion around, like, ketchup or something. But Sriracha has a lot of fans, but for all the fans, I don't think most people would recognize the name David Tran, the guy who made this sauce, or Hoi Fong Foods, the company that makes it in the U.S. So people just don't, they just don't know the story. So yeah. I thought it'd be an interesting story to tell.
Yeah, well, I'm anxious to see it, and you're actually the first Kickstarter campaign that I actually backed. So, like, I've never backed a campaign before. I'm just like, oh, this is really interesting campaign. And plus, I know you from Indie Mogul, which, by the way, like, do you see, like, 10 years ago or something like that, or, like, 15 years ago, do you see yourself, like, doing what you do now, like, being a video producer for YouTube and, like, producing content for Indie Mogul and then producing, like, this Sriracha documentary? Do you see, like, looking back at, like, a child version of yourself, do you see...
No, I don't think I saw this in advance, and I want to thank you for supporting the film. A lot of people that are supporting it, I think, are first time Kickstarter backers. That's what I've noticed. So I'm glad that my project was interesting enough to convince people to join Kickstarter. But yeah, I mean, let's see. 10 years ago, I was 18 or 19. I was in college. I was at film school, and I don't think I knew what it was going to lead to. I think it's kind of daunting to be in film school and people telling you about how Hollywood works and how hard it is to be a director. And I mean, trying to convince people to be cinematographers because there's more room for that. But then, you know, I guess I don't know what I thought I was going to be, because I don't think Hollywood is for me. I'm not really a feature length movie guy. I don't think I would be, I'd want to be like a production assistant on some giant Hollywood production. I like having a lot of control over my videos. So I've really enjoyed being a freelance videographer, doing projects for other people. And I like making videos on YouTube. And now I'm looking forward to making this. For me, it'll be pretty long, 30 minutes, but it's still no feature, this documentary. So I don't know. I don't think I had any foresight as to what I'd be doing right now in my career.
Yeah, I think now you definitely you start seeing that more that people can do whatever they want just because of like the Wild Wild West, like why did I just reference a Will Smith movie, but the Wild West of like the of YouTube and just like even with like Kickstarter, just like getting film like these this is a chance for like indie filmmakers that get their films made. I think it's a great like world we're living in right now that it's so much freedom. Like, yeah, you still have like the big Hollywood producers and they're gonna write the check for like the $500 billion Transformers movie. Like that's still going to be an audience. But even Steven Spielberg said, I think like you talked about like you do a weekly live show on Wednesday, right? And you talked about like Steven Spielberg saying that the industry's gonna implode in the next few years or something like that. Which I think speaking like you said, speaking on his side, like yeah, maybe it will implode because you just can't like make big blockbusters anymore. It's going to be a lot smaller, and like maybe like the YouTubers like yourself and like freelancers are just going to like they're going to be like the celebrities now instead of like Steven Spielberg. Like, what do you think about that?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think, it's easy for me to see that the model should change and will evolve, and that doesn't worry me because I look at a project like the one I'm working on right now. This 30-minute documentary about hot sauce is not going to play in movie theaters, right? I mean, like, people aren't going to buy a $10 ticket to go watch it at the local Cineplex. That's not how this is going to get seen. It's going to get seen in film festivals where people are used to watching shorter stuff. Hopefully it'll be seen on Netflix where people are watching shorter stuff like that. There's plenty of platforms available now, like VHX, these platforms and YouTube too, and Vimeo that can show your work and you can get paid for it if you want to. You can charge a fee to watch. I think that's a model. And then I was also, I've been talking to some distributors. There are people potentially interested in showing this kind of film, but I think they recognize that, again, it's not going to be people lining up outside a movie theater. It may be other things. It may be like a special event where there's food involved and you get to screen this thing. I mean, I think people recognize that there's money still to be made. It's just you may have to make it in different ways.
Well, hell, like if there's gonna be like food involved, you might w want to get Hoi Fong Foods, like maybe they can do a screener or something like in LA or something, and like they can like it'll be like a, it's pretty much like are they paying you for this? Like it's pretty much like free marketing for them, like really,
Yeah, it is.
like,
It is like marketing for them. They're not paying me because they really don't need marketing. In fact, I think they're potentially wary about what I was doing. They wanted to make sure that I was making something.
Uncovering a good story.
Yeah, because I mean, they, I mean, they, and I wonder if they even want too much publicity because their product is so in demand that they can't even keep up with the demand. I think they're happy. It's not like they're missing out on a market. They're making plenty of sauce. People are buying it up. They don't really need to do anything to advertise that. So, as long as I don't get in the way, they don't really need my help.
But like what's your like kind of a random question, but like do you like have a favorite movie that like inspired you to like be a filmmaker or like a favorite director really?
Yeah, I mean, there's lots of things that have inspired me, and I'm always embarrassed to say that when I was in high school and going into college, one of my favorite directors was Brett Ratner, because I really liked Rush Hour and Rush Hour 2. And he's made a lot of great films, and then he's also made a bunch of terrible films. But I think that's like all of us. We make stuff we're really proud of, and we make stuff that we know doesn't show off our true ability. I think growing up, I seem to like sequels for some reason. I really like Back to the Future 2. I really like Empire Strikes Back. But then it was in college that I really started watching a lot of documentaries and realizing how much I enjoy watching that medium and how much I enjoy producing stuff like that. So my favorite documentary directors are probably Werner Herzog and Errol Morris. But I love documentaries just because there's like an infinite number of them on every topic, which again is why I just can't believe no one's made the Sriracha story yet.
Yeah. I think, like, I kind of, we kind of had, like, the same, like, path a little bit, because, like, I just graduated from college, and, like, in my last, like, year of college, like, I was started watching a bunch of documentaries on Netflix, just because there's so many of them on there. And, like, really, like, I'll just mention, like, some of my, like, favorite documentary filmmakers, and, like, my favorite one that I, hopefully Sriracha can, like, overcome it, but it's going to be hard, just Indie Game the Movie.
Oh, yeah, that was a good movie.
That's a great documentary, though. It was just, like, blew me away. And that's two filmmakers that made, like, a documentary about indie game developers, and it was all funded, like, on Kickstarter.
Yeah.
They had, like, two or three Kickstarter campaigns, and I'm like, it's nice that we, again, we live in a world where, like, the indie filmmaker actually has, like, a say.
Yeah, and that's an example, like you said, they raised their money through crowdfunding, so they were able to pay for it up front, and then now I think it's available, you buy it through, I think it might actually be the VHX platform that they're using to sell it. So yeah, I mean, there's an example of a movie that does not need to be in a theater. I'm sure it would play it in some film festivals, but sure. I mean, they're doing fine on that.
Yeah. So do you have, like, any, like, goals for, like, any film festivals that you want to, like, submit to?
Yeah.
Like, it's a film festival in my town. I'm just
kidding. you're in California, right?
Yeah. Sonora, California.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't come up with my complete list of the ones I definitely want to enter. I mean, I have a pretty good list going of things I think I probably want to enter. The first one will be Sundance. They have the first deadline, which is mid September.
Mm-hmm.
And that's their final deadline. So it'd be cool to get in Sundance, but I've never been to Sundance, so I guess I don't know what I would be missing if I didn't get in. The one I really want to get into is South by Southwest, and that's in Austin in March, but the deadline is in the beginning of October. So I really need a film done by then. That's their middle deadline. All these film festivals have, like, an early deadline, a middle deadline, and a late deadline. But the earlier you can get it in, the better, because they're actually going to start picking people, so you have a better chance of getting in.
Yeah.
But that's the festival that I really enjoy going to, and that's the one that inspired me to make this film. Not that I feel like I have to get into South By. If I don't get in, it won't be the end of the world. I'm just looking forward to having lots of people see it. So I guess if I didn't get into any film festivals, I'd be really disappointed, but that seems like it'd be unlikely. I mean, that's the great thing about film festivals. There's so many, and there's food ones, and there's documentary ones, and so yeah, I'll be looking to just get it shown as much as I can.
Yeah, I think, like a lot of people, like, it's nice to, like, just talk to someone that actually likes going to film festivals, because, like, I've talked to, like, quite a few people that kind of think that they're kind of like it's kind of old generation of film going, just because it's like you don't really get, like, a name from it. Like, it's just so you can get, like, a distribution, like, deal or something like that. It's not, like, you're not going to make any money by submitting to a film festival. But I are you looking forward to, like, if you submit, like, to South By, like, someone will watch the Sriracha documentary and they'll have, like, the same experience that you had when you went to South By, and, like, I want to make a documentary about lamps or something. I don't know.
Yeah, that'd be the most incredible thing. I didn't even think about that, but it's really come full circle that I was there last year, inspired, thinking I think I could be here next year, and then if I were to get in and someone else thought the same thing, that'd be amazing. I'd hope that person would come up to me and say something. But I mean, you're right, and I hear that a lot, that I mean, a film festival is probably not going to be a way for me to make a lot of money or to, like, launch my career. And that's not why I'm doing it. I like that film festival experience, and I just want to be there. And you know, I mean, sure, you can maybe get more views and become more famous on YouTube or something, but it's nice to be able to go into a room and see your film on a giant screen, hear the people in the room reacting, and then stand up afterward and answer some questions. And just that, it's that interaction that you can get at film festivals that you just can't get.
It's such a nice environment at film festivals, because I don't think I've actually been to a bad one.
Yeah.
Because it's hard to actually go to a bad one, just because most people that go to those like film. You're not going to get like an asshole at the back of the room just like, oh yeah, I don't, like he's just being condescending and stuff like that. They're usually like, it's very like a very warm environment. And even if you don't have a film and you go to a film festival, like you have your experience, like I want to, you get like this creative like burst of energy. I like that aspect of film festivals. Yeah. So I hope they stay around.
Yeah. And I think I'm looking forward to the big ones and the little local ones. I know that any of them are rewarding to go to and have your stuff shown at.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You said you wanted to make this like 20 minutes, right? Because you have a lot of other stuff to do, like indie news. And...
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's plenty of stuff that's keeping me busy, which is a big reason. That's one reason that I want to keep this like somewhere between 20 and 30 minutes, maybe a little bit longer. I want it to be under 40 because 40 is the cutoff for short films. I don't want this to be a feature. Part of it is because I don't want to spend a year working on it. I want to get this done for the film festival deadlines. But part of it is also that this is just, that's the kind of thing I like to watch. I like to watch 30-minute docs. I think this is a story that could be 90 minutes. I'm probably not the guy to tell it in 90 minutes, though, because I like fast-paced things. I like documentaries that move. I don't think I could make a good 90-minute film right now.
And really, with the YouTube generation, like short film festivals are getting a lot more popular, which is, that's what It's a Film Festival is, that is in my town.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just because, like, with YouTube and like 2-minute videos, 3-minute videos, like people like their attention spans are getting like shorter, which a lot of people say it's a bad thing, but I kind of see it as a good thing just because like that's goes back to like the Steven Spielberg thinking the film industry is going to implode. It's not really going to implode for like a bad thing. It could maybe good for the industry. So.
Yeah.
That's my thoughts.
Well, my only concern is that maybe that I'm, you know, I try not to let this bother me too much because I just want to make the film that I want to see. I want to make a good film. But I am a little bit worried that I'm not making a feature. There's a place, you know, people are used to watching features. And when it comes to short films, a lot of festivals and a lot of people like to watch like 5-minute films or 10-minute films. I mean, they fit well into a program. So by making a 30-minute film, I may be kind of alienating two different kinds of audiences. It's like people don't want to watch it if they're interested in features, and people don't want to watch it if they're interested in shorts. So I think I'm really just hoping there's an audience for this topic, that they don't care how long it is, that they're interested in the story.
All right. And my final question is kind of a funny one, but I'll let you go here because I know you're busy. You have a busy schedule. But when do you sleep? Because like you produce content for like a YouTube channel in Indie Mogul, which everyone should go subscribe to if you haven't subscribed to yet. And you've got this Sriracha documentary, and then you're also a wedding videographer.
Yeah, I just did a wedding on Saturday.
Yeah. I did my first wedding about a month ago.
Cool.
And I'm in the process of editing. But like, when do you sleep?
At night. No. I don't know. I wake up early, I guess. I mean, I actually go to sleep pretty early. I go to sleep at like 10:30. But then I'm up at like 6:30 every day. So like this morning I'm working on Indie News and I don't know. I guess I do get less sleep now that I'm working on all these things.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's harder for me to sleep because I'm thinking about all these things.
Well, you definitely have good time management, and I think that's one thing that they don't really tell you in film school all that much. Like, I've never been to film school, so I shouldn't be saying that. I took a video production class at a community college, and time management is so crucial, just like in life and just like film careers. So yeah, you inspire me. So and I can't wait to see the Sriracha doc.
Well, the crazy thing about video is that there's always more time you could spend. Like, I'm sure when I finish the film, I'm going to be thinking, man, if I just had one more month, I would do these little changes. So it's like, and I have to get comfortable with that on Indie News, that it's not going to ever be perfect. Because I used to like to spend weeks and weeks and weeks on a 30-second video. But now I'm getting to the point in my career where I just have to get things done and move on to the next project. So Mm-hmm. I'm excited to see what I can do with Sriracha, the documentary. But I know that, you know, like anything, it's just, it's not going to be everything I want it to be. I just have to make it most of what I want it to be.
Well, thank you for joining me for this 20-minute talk.
Yeah.
Griffin, and it's been fun, and I can't wait to see the Sriracha documentary, and I love everything that you do on Indie Mogul.
Thank you.
And yeah, you have a good day.
Yeah, you too. I appreciate it.
All right.
Bye.
And oh, is there anything else you want to like promote? Anything like? did I do your job?
No,
for
I think it's really just the film right now. Yeah, so I just help people. I guess. Follow along on Facebook at facebook.com/srirachafilm.
And all right.
So if they didn't back it on Kickstarter, they can at least find out when and where it's going to play near them.
Yeah. And I actually just thought of like one more question.
Sure.
It had to do with Kickstarter, and it's kind of backtracking a little bit, but like, what do you think of like these celebrities getting on Kickstarter and like asking for money for the film to be made?
Yeah.
Not even going to the production and kind of, some people feel like it's taking away money from like filmmakers like yourself, but like,
yeah, I agree with both sides in the debate, because my first instinct when people start attacking someone like Zach Braff for coming onto Kickstarter and asking for money is right away, I think those people probably don't understand what crowdfunding is. It's like, they're not panhandling. It's not like they're saying like, hey, I really need some money. I'm a celebrity and I don't have any money to make my film. Like, they're not doing that, because that's not what I'm doing either. I'm not saying, please donate some money to my cause. I'm saying, I have something that I think you're interested in and I want you to help me make it. And when I make it, you're going to get something of value back. Like, you're not, this isn't a waste of money or a donation. You're actually pledging money because you're going to receive something good in return. So I'm okay with someone like Zach Braff doing that. And I don't think he's taking away money from me. If anything, he probably caused more people to be familiar with Kickstarter, so they were probably more willing to back my project. But then I can look to the future and say, well, I guess if this trend continues, I mean, if every single movie backed by every single celebrity comes to crowdfunding as the way to make money, then yeah, maybe there won't be room for me. I mean, then, you know, it'd be so crowded on Kickstarter that no one would ever be supporting me, I guess. Mm-hmm. So I could see that argument too. I guess now, though, I have no problem with it. It's just maybe it could become a problem someday.
Yeah. I look at it just mainly like Zach Braff doesn't really bother me. I think the one that really bothered me was the Veronica Mars one,
mm-hmm.
which is mainly, I thought it was, I saw Warner Brothers kind of like put their like fingerprints all over it, and Zach Braff was more of like like he was doing it completely on his own.
Yeah,
and like, and also like my argument is like Kickstarter is not the only crowdfunding service. Like, there's also like Indiegogo and like there's another one out there. I forget what it's called, but like Indiegogo is not as popular, but like that's also like a source for filmmakers too.
Yeah,
and like you don't need to raise like all like your complete goal on Indiegogo as compared to Kickstarter. So
yeah,
like maybe that's a good first, like if it's your first crowdfunding project, then maybe go to Indiegogo and then Kickstarter. I don't know.
Yeah. Indiegogo is a lot more open to a lot of different things.
Mm-hmm.
But I also knew that Kickstarter was more popular. And so once I was confident that I'd built enough of an audience
mm-hmm.
off of Kickstarter before Kickstarter, I was confident that I could at least reach, but I, you know, I set my goal pretty low just in case, you know, I wanted to make sure that I got the money, if mm-hmm. we didn't raise very much. So I was hoping to get 5, thinking maybe I could get 10. I couldn't believe we got 20.
Yeah. Well, I think I asked this before, but what was that like when you're like, you're asleep and then you wake up and you look at your phone and you see Sriracha documentary over 20,000. Like, what was it like to get that notification or whatever, since we live in an age of notifications?
Yeah, well, I mean, fortunately, I was tapped into it the whole time. So, I mean, it was surprising for those first few hours. For the first 8 hours, I'm watching it and watching, you know, people, my friends share it. Everyone was sharing it so fast. So in 8 hours, it got to $5,000. Mm-hmm. But after the first few days, I mean, it's, you know, it took 8 hours to get to 5,000. I think it took like 3 more days to get to 10,000. And then it took the rest of the time to get to 20. I mean, it took like three more weeks. So it really slowed down after day one. You could see it kind of plateau. So no surprise when it got to 20,000. I mean, it was slowly creeping towards it for a month.
All right. Well, I'll let you go. Like I said, I know you have a busy schedule. I just felt like I need to ask those two questions. So, all right.
Cool. It's great talking to you.
All right. Great talking to you too. I'll promote you one more time. Subscribe to Indie Mogul. Follow the Sriracha documentary at srirachadoc.com or
srirachamovie.com.
Okay.
You can figure out how to spell Sriracha. So maybe just Google it.
Google Sriracha.
Yeah.
And then can they follow you on Twitter?
Yeah, I mean, there's a Twitter. There's Sriracha Movie on Twitter. It's Sriracha Film on Facebook. I don't know why Sriracha Movie wasn't available. It's actually available. No one's using it. It just wasn't available to pick up. I don't know why.
Oh, that's weird. Yeah. All right. Well, you have a good day, Griffin.
You too.
And happy filmmaking.
Thanks a lot.
Yeah. And happy editing. I know you're doing a lot of that.
That's
so
what I'm doing today. Okay.
All right. See you, Griffin. Bye. So I hope you enjoyed that interview with Griffin Hammond. Griffin Hammond is enormously nice. I'm a little bit speechless after just listening to that that interview. And he was just hugely nice. Like, I actually scheduled this interview like 2 weeks before, and he was going to New York to be filming, and I was like, oh, it's okay. Like, he was really nice, and he worked with my schedule too and stuff like that. I always like it when I'm scheduling interviews for this podcast, and the guest is always like totally willing to come on, and like he's willing to like drop everything that he's doing, because we actually recorded this after he just filmed an episode of Indie News, and I'm like, dude, you don't sleep, you really don't sleep. And he had to edit it, and crazy, I don't know, it's crazy. Griffin Hammond is immensely busy right now with the whole freaking Indie Mogul and stuff like that. And that is my phone. I forgot to silence it. I'm not sure if you heard that. Hopefully you didn't. But yeah. Anyways, I don't really have anything else to talk about except for maybe I'll talk a little bit about Community Season 5 being renewed and Dan Harmon coming back, because I don't think I've ever had a chance to talk about this. It's because I find it a little bit odd and strange that Community is coming back. Like, I wasn't really all that happy with Community Season 4, which a lot of you got to listen to like my complaints about that in great detail on other Cinephiles podcasts, other Cinephiles episodes. But it, like, the Breaking Bad, like, going back to Breaking Bad, like, Breaking Bad's timeline is bad things come to an end. Good things don't last forever is what I'm trying to say there. And Community on Season 5, like, I don't really like that. And, like, the whole reason, I guess, why, like, they picked up Community for Season 5 is so they can be syndicated and making lots of money, and then Dan Harmon's coming back so they can, like, bring the fans back. I just don't want Community to be like The Office and just like just be there until Season 9. I'm like, I don't know. I'm not sure if Dan Harmon would really want to like be there for 9 seasons. But I really don't think he expected to get like 2 more seasons out of this. Especially, I don't really think he expected to come back either, just because the fourth season was so awful and he has to do like damage control and stuff like that. And but yeah, I don't know. But enough with that. Let's talk about how great Griffin Hammond is. He is great. I really had a joy talking with him. And Griffin Hammond is awesome, and please subscribe to Indie Mogul. If he submits the Sriracha documentary to a local film festival, to your local film festival, go see it. It looks like it's going to be pretty good. And I wish him luck on the editing for that, and the submission process and stuff like that. And that's pretty much all I have to say here. But yeah, thank you, Griffin, for being on the podcast, and I'm sorry that this took way too long. But yeah, music for this podcast is going to come from The 88, which is a band that they do the community theme song, and it is the community theme song. It is, at least it was here. And listen to the lyrics, because to have community's theme song, like, have this be community's theme song, it's just very contradictory. Like, they didn't really, it's almost like they didn't really expect this community to, like, to exist. But yeah, hope you enjoy this song by The 88, at least it was here. And, like I said, subscribe to IndieMogul, if you're a filmmaking, if you're a filmmaker or a film fan, subscribe to IndieMogul. And, yeah, my name is Marley Silverbrand, and I will see you around. Okay, one more thing. Actually, I just turned off the recording and realized that I need to say that episode 21 is going to be the end of the first season of the Cinephiles podcast, and the Cinephiles podcast is going to actually return on September 17th. And it's going to return on September 17th, and that's going to be a Tuesday. It's going to be uploaded on September 17th and stuff like that. And season 2 is going to be mostly just me, just because it's going to be really hard to schedule Jeremy, Ryan, and Kelsey. It's going to be hard to schedule, like, all of them, but expect, like, more interviews than you're expecting. Like, don't expect, like, an interview or two, like, on the weekend and stuff like that. I really want to start doing a lot more of these interviews and stuff like that, and, yeah. But, yeah, season 2, September 17th, don't expect any more episodes until September 17th for season 2 of the Cinephiles podcast. And also, follow me on Twitter at @msilverbrand. I don't think Griffin Hammond has a Twitter. But just subscribe to IndieMogul, like I said in the previous recording. Follow me on Twitter, like I said, to find more updates on the Cinephiles podcast, more updates on what I'm doing. Currently doing some writing right now on a web series, and kind of waiting for it to come to fruition, and waiting for some actors to pop up in my field, in my peripheral vision, stuff like that. Or why did I say that? I don't know. I'm waiting for some actors to pop up and see if they want to act in my web series. And yeah, I always have ideas like buzzing around in my head. Whether it's good enough to go on my YouTube channel, we'll see. But anyways, once again, my name is Marley Silverbrand. Enjoy the 88, at least it was here. And my name's Marley Silverbrand, and go watch some movies. Give me your hands, show me the door. I cannot stand to wait anymore. Somebody say, be what you be. We could be old and